One of the fears is if members of the community are reaching out to law enforcement, or in addition to the domestic violence, are they also likely to be a victim of a hate crime?
It was originally billed as the Gay Olympics, but just days before it was scheduled to begin, the U.S. Olympic Committee filed an injunction that disallowed the word Olympics.
The film was made in 12 countries in 9 languages. I always say it took 6.5 years and a lifetime, really, because it's really about going into places of intense invisibility and trying to make that invisibility visible.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Panama purges its sodomy law, L.A. assesses services for LGBT violence victims, and queer Muslims wage a jihad for love. All that and a lot more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Steve Levin.
And I'm Mark Zeka.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 16, 2008. Panama's president, Martin Torrijos Espino, has signed a decree repealing a 1949 law that punished consensual adult sodomy with a $500 fine or jail time. According to local media reports, the LGBT group New Men and Women of Panama and other human rights organizations had lobbied for the change. Also signed by Health Minister Rosario E. Turner, the decree said the law contravened the Panamanian Constitution and international human rights treaties that Panama has signed. It also conflicted with anti-discrimination policies of the Health Ministry's Sexually Transmitted Diseases Program. According to Amnesty International, 11 nations in Central America, South America, and the Caribbean continue to outlaw consensual adult same-gender sex. Antigua and Barbuda, Barbados, Belize, Dominica, Grenada, Guyana, Jamaica, St. Kitts and Nevis, St. Lucia, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and Trinidad and Tobago. All of those countries are former British colonies.
Ecuador's president, Rafael Correa, has defended a new draft constitution for his country that grants same-gender couples the rights of marriage, according to a report in El Telegrafo newspaper. The document faces a popular vote on September 28th. Jesus of Nazareth never preached hatred, homophobia, or segregation, Correa said during a speech in Monteverde. What we are doing, he continued, is recognizing the dignity of all people without discrimination based on race, sex, or sexual orientation. A poll released earlier this month found that 47% of the electorate plans to vote for the new constitution, while 31% said they reject it. A yes vote of more than 50% is required for passage.
Not as many same-gender couples are taking advantage of the Czech Republic's registered partnership law than when it first came into force 2 years ago, according to a recent report in the newspaper Pravo. From July 1, 2006 to the end of that year, 235 same-gender couples tied the knot, but only 105 couples have done so in the first half of this year. The report also said that the largest number of same-gender partnerships have been contracted in Prague, gay male couples have outnumbered lesbians, and there have been 9 same-gender couple divorces.
But the Australian Capital Territory's civil union law is being called a complete success, 3 months after it took effect. Even though only 23 same-gender couples have registered so far, it exceeds the 15 that the government had expected by this time, according to Territorial Attorney General Simon Corbell. He predicted with the onset of spring in Australia that even more couples would unite. The Civil Partnerships Act was passed by the ACT Legislative Assembly in May, after the territory agreed to a stipulation against formal ceremonies. Prime Minister Kevin Rudd's Labor government said they would contravene a federal law limiting marriage to heterosexual couples. Territory officials maintained that the ceremonies were a matter of equality, but faced with an override, they removed the contentious clause. The Civil Partnerships Act gives same-gender couples most of the rights married couples enjoy under territorial law. A third of Australia's 8 states and territories have varying laws providing some benefits to same-gender couples.
The umbrella group behind a proposed constitutional amendment to ban same-gender marriage in California, Proposition 8, has ended its fight over the wording that will appear on the November ballot. The so-called Protect Marriage Coalition said it made the decision this week after a state appeals court rejected their urgent appeal of a lower court ruling that upheld Attorney General Jerry Brown's revised title and summary of the measure. Further appeals wouldn't be heard in time to change the ballot wording before the November 4th vote. The measure was originally described as limiting marriage in California to a man and a woman. Brown changed the description to say that the proposed amendment would eliminate the right of same-gender couples to marry and that it could result in California losing tens of millions of dollars in tax revenues. Brown's office said that the original wording was written before the California Supreme Court struck down the state ban on same-gender marriage in May. Hundreds of lesbi-gay couples have since legally married there. Sacramento County Superior Court Judge Timothy Frawley had earlier ruled that, in light of the high court decision, the revised wording accurately summarized the impact of the proposition. Both sides of the issue have agreed that the revised language will make the measure more difficult to pass. Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger opposes the amendment and has promised to campaign against it.
Meanwhile, several pro-LGBT bills in California are awaiting Schwarzenegger's signature. He's refused to sign any new legislation until lawmakers pass a state budget, over which Democrats and Republicans have been bickering well past the date mandated for its passage. While the governor's signature on any of the lesbi-gay-related measures is far from certain, the state's leading LGBT rights group, Equality California, has celebrated recent passage of bills to strengthen the state's sexual orientation inclusive civil rights laws to protect LGBT seniors and LGBT children in foster care, to provide tax relief for same-gender couples, and to establish May 22nd, his birthday, as a day to honor pioneering LGBT rights leader and assassinated San Francisco supervisor Harvey Milk. Right-wing opponents have reportedly been flooding Schwarzenegger's office with calls and emails specifically demanding that he veto that measure.
But Florida's Republican Governor Charlie Crist has announced his support for a proposed constitutional amendment on that state's November ballot that would ban any legal recognition of same-gender couples. The measure says, inasmuch as marriage is the legal union of only one man and one woman, no other legal union that is treated as marriage or the substantial equivalent thereof shall be valid or recognized. Florida law already limits marriage to heterosexual couples, but supporters of the amendment worry that it could be overturned in court. Opponents warn that the language of the amendment is so broad that it would also eliminate domestic partnerships where they're legal in the state. Those unions are also often favored by older opposite-gender couples because remarriage could jeopardize Social Security and other benefits. Activists in the state of Pennsylvania last month successfully fought efforts to place a constitutional amendment on the November ballot there to ban legal recognition of same-gender unions.
A U.S. federal appeals court this week rejected an attempt by opponents of Oregon's domestic partnership law to put a repeal initiative before that state's voters this November. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the determination of Secretary of State Bill Bradbury that a conservative group had failed to gather enough signatures to qualify the measure for the November ballot. Oregon's domestic partnership law allows same-gender couples and heterosexual couples unable to marry to form legally recognized unions, giving them hospital visitation rights and the right to make medical decisions for each other, to file joint state tax returns, and to have joint health insurance plans, and to take sick leave to care for their partner. It was passed by the legislature in 2007 after efforts to enact a marriage equality law were unsuccessful. Conservative groups immediately challenged the domestic partnership law in court, charging that it violated Oregon's constitutional ban on same-gender marriage. After those legal efforts failed, they began circulating petitions to place a repeal measure on the ballot. About 2,500 same-gender couples have registered as domestic partners in the state since the law took effect.
Elsewhere, LGBT people and their allies enjoyed Iceland's 10th annual Pride Festival in downtown Reykjavik on August 9th. Police estimated the crowd at 30 to 40,000. One of the organizers, Heimer Mar Pettersson, told local media that it was closer to a record 100,000 and that police can't count or they're counting wrong deliberately, but also commended their quick response to a bomb threat during the festival.
Inflammatory anti-lesbi-gay remarks by an Irish member of parliament probably inspired more people than expected to celebrate Pride in Belfast last week. An estimated 4,000 LGBT activists and their supporters marched in the parade despite bad weather. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown this week rejected calls for a formal censure of Irish MP Iris Robinson, who likened homosexuality to the sexual abuse of children during a parliamentary debate, and then, during a radio interview, called homosexuality disgusting, loathsome, nauseating, wicked, and vile. She also claimed that gays and lesbians could be cured and be heterosexual. In addition, serving in the British Parliament, Robinson is a member of the Northern Ireland Assembly. Brown's spokespeople responded to more than 15,000 calls and postings to the Prime Ministerial website demanding action against Robinson by saying that there's no constitutional authority for a Prime Minister to censure an MP, and that individual members are accountable to their electorate for their own comments.
And finally, police in Berlin have been asked to investigate an Arabic language magazine for incitement following its publication of an article titled "A Flesh-Eating Bacteria and Sexual Abnormality," warning readers not to shake hands with gays because they could transmit such diseases. One never knows what kind of bacteria and germs are found on them, it said. The article included comments by people the magazine said were authorities on skin diseases and was accompanied by graphic photographs of various skin infections. The LGBT Association of Berlin-Brandenburg filed a complaint with police this week against the free publication Al Salam, which is available in restaurants and cafes throughout the city. Incitement against minorities, including gays and lesbians, is illegal in Germany, but similar allegations have not been prosecuted in the past because some have warned that such actions would infringe on religious freedoms. LGBT activists are calling on leaders of the country's large Muslim community to condemn the article.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending August 16th, 2008. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Steve Levin.
And I'm Mark Zecca.
A gay filmmaker searches for the homosexual heart of Islam, and queer athletes go for the gold at the heart of their dreams. Later in the program. With homophobic hate crimes on the rise in a number of major U.S. cities, sometimes it's hard for LGBT people to know where to expect the next attack to come from. It could come from law enforcement. It could even be at home. In Los Angeles, the City Council created a new subcommittee this week to deal with how domestic violence is handled in the LGBT community. This Way Out correspondent Dan Fritz reports.
The LGBT community faces a high degree of violence from intolerance in Southern California. The LA County Human Relations Commission hate crime report for last year found that LGBT individuals experience proportionately more physically aggressive attacks, motivated by hate, than any other group. Transgendered people were most likely to experience a violent hate crime. 100% of hate crimes committed against them were violent in nature. Tara Slavin is the lead domestic violence attorney with the LA Gay and Lesbian Center. She advised the council in the creation of the subcommittee.
Issues of transphobia clearly impact survivors of domestic violence. So one of the fears is if members of the community are reaching out to law enforcement, or in addition to the domestic violence, are they also likely to be a victim of a hate crime based on their gender identity?
Councilmember Richard Alarcón authored the motion to create the subcommittee to address the immediate needs for LGBT victims of domestic violence.
We're very short domestic violence beds. What are the policies that are used by shelters with regard to the LGBT community? Since there's only 800 beds, it's very difficult to get services for the LGBT community. So while this started with a conversation that I had with a human relations commissioner about disparate treatment between how police officers handle LGBT cases of domestic violence versus other cases of domestic violence, because they might fail to recognize it as a domestic violence issue, it has emerged into something that's far broader and hopefully will produce education, information, and new procedures to better handle the situations.
Slavin, the Gay and Lesbian Center attorney, says the agenda will include a focus on LAPD policy.
There's still a lot of invisibility and lack of awareness around the issue of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender domestic violence. And so one of the things that this committee is set up to do is both to sort of create a general awareness both within the LGBT community as well as within the mainstream community, and then look at the barriers to service. So whether it is, you know, in many cases law enforcement is still not acting or reacting in an appropriate manner, then there's, you know, kind of barriers across the border. Given the fact that the committee is a part of LA City and it sort of has an oversight over law enforcement, I hope we can really work with law enforcement around training and tracking and better serving the LGBT community.
Slavin expects initial reports from the new subcommittee to go public as early as January. I'm Dan Fritz.
Dreaming of a Gay Olympics, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. The concept of a gay Olympics is credited to a competitor in the 1968 Olympics named Dr. Tom Waddell. But in 1982, just 3 weeks before the first gay Olympics was to take place in San Francisco, the United States Olympic Committee obtained a restraining order forbidding the use of the word Olympics. Although the committee had not objected to the use of the word in events like the Nebraska Rat Olympics, the Crab Cooking Olympics, or even the Nude Olympics, Waddell lost his fight in a 1987 decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. So, he named his event the Gay Games. Still one of the largest sporting events in the world, Waddell's mission continues to educate people through sport in the spirit of better understanding. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
Hi, I'm Margaret Cho.
Hello, this is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm comedian Bob Smith.
Hi, I'm Kate Clinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
Hi, I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepard.
Hello, I'm Scott Thompson.
Hi, I'm David Sedaris.
Hi, this is Jeff Straker.
Hi, this is Chastity Bono, and you're listening to
This Way Out.
This Way Out?
This Way Out. The International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Extra.
Are you signed up for our emailed This Way Out updates? We send them out every few weeks, briefly reviewing recent and previewing upcoming programming and dishing some behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show. We also send out weekly email messages describing the specific content of each program. All you have to do to receive one or both of these messages is email tworadio@aol.com. And be assured that we don't share or sell your email address or anything about you to anyone else, and we never will. Again, to receive the occasional This Way Out updates or our weekly program information messages, ask for one or both by name when you email tworadio@aol.com. That's tworadio@aol.com.
كل يوم مقرب لي بيزيد شوقي وغرامي ايدي تلمس ايدي تهرب من المعاني.
Homosexuality isn't a choice, of course, but many forget that often neither is religion. And that's certainly the case for the world's dense population of devout Muslims. Islam is now the second largest religion in the world. The documentary A Jihad for Love takes a close look at being gay or lesbian in often sexually repressive societies. This Way Out's Steve Pride talks with the film's courageous director.
Hi, my name is Pervez Sharma. I'm the director-producer of A Jihad for Love.
A Jihad for Love is the world's first documentary film on the coexistence of Islam and homosexuality.
I was very invested in trying to make a film that would have an important place in shifting the discourse about Islam away from a place of violence, away from everything that we see in the mainstream media. So in an interesting way, everyone in this film is really coming out as Muslim. Now, they do happen to be gay and lesbian, and their homosexuality is what brings them into deep and profound conflict with their faith. But for me, the film was really always about Islam and about everyone coming out as a Muslim.
How long did it take to make, and how many countries did you visit?
The film was made in 12 countries in 9 languages. I always say it took 6.5 years and a lifetime, really, because it's really about going into places of intense invisibility and trying to make that invisibility visible, but at the same time trying to do it with honesty and respect for the religion. Now, in the film, you travel to Iran, you travel to Egypt, you travel to Turkey, to Pakistan, to India. So it really covers a very wide expanse of the different worlds of Islam. And it does so in a way that seeks to present the real intense diversity of the religion and how it changes geographically and culturally, and how the experience of being Muslim can differ substantially. What's really also amazing about the film is that it tells the story of the world's first openly gay imam, Mohsen Hendricks, who is a religious teacher in South Africa, and he's a father of three children.
How do the laws and attitudes differ from country to country?
We're in the year 1428 of the Islamic calendar now, and there was a sexual revolution inherent in the very birth of the religion. Now, many people don't automatically assume that, but when the Quran was revealed and subsequently after that, there was a tremendous amount of honesty in discussing matters pertaining to sexuality. What was also remarkable was that in the Muslim cultures that developed over time, like the Ottoman Empire, the Persian Empire, the Mughal Empire in India, homosexuality was not just tolerated, sometimes it was openly celebrated. Islamic art, literature from those periods is full of examples of, for example, older men and younger men, and the form of the young man is idolized in many ways. There's a lot of poetry about this. What happened, though, was that many sections of the Islamic world were colonized. And traditionally, Victorian moralists or Orientalist scholars had looked at Islamic societies as dens of permissiveness, where anything went sexually. But after colonization, a lot of penal codes were written into the codes of these countries that were brought in by the French or the British. Some of these penal codes still exist in countries like Lebanon, in Pakistan, in India, in Bangladesh. That's a huge chunk of Muslims on this planet. But after the colonizers left, and I'm trying to give you a wide sweep of history in a few sentences, really, people think that there was a rise in religious revival movements that were also freedom movements. So you had the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran, for example. You have the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And the orthodoxy within the religion, really, in the 20th century, became extremely loud against homosexuality, inheriting some of the dogma from what they said was in Sharia law, but also from sort of Victorian ideas of morality, and in a strange way saying that homosexuality was a Western concept that had been imported into Muslim societies. So this, I think, complicates the film tremendously and complicates the premise of the film tremendously, in that there isn't just one way to look at Islam and homosexuality. And I think the film tries to stress that in the diversity of people you meet. So you meet a Sufi lesbian couple in Turkey who are living in a country that does not criminalize homosexuality and who, for the most part, are living quite openly. But you also meet the imam in South Africa who is challenged substantially by a very traditionalist scholar of Islam who tells him that in a Muslim country, the debate would be not about whether to kill you, but how to kill you. Now, South Africa, though, interestingly, has one of the world's most open constitutions. And then in India, you meet a Shia cleric who tells a young man that the doors of forgiveness are always open in Islam. And when the young man persists with his questions, he says he should go and see a doctor. So there is a substantial difference, if you will, within the many worlds of Islam.
Many of the countries you visited wouldn't have welcomed a film crew making a documentary about gay Muslims. So how did you shoot it?
There was no film crew. A lot of times it was just me. But in a country like Turkey, of course, I filmed with an amazing Turkish woman who's also a filmmaker herself. When it was just me, it was usually about taking a lot of precautions, always traveling on a tourist visa, and adopting what many would say are guerrilla filmmaking tactics. So that would mean, for example, not using a tripod in public. That would mean trying to record innocuous footage for the first 10 minutes of the tape, for the last 10 or so minutes of a tape. This completely drove the editor crazy during the editing, but we had to do it. That would mean usually, always actually, putting the tapes in my check-in baggage as opposed to my carry-on baggage. And, you know, I remember one time in Egypt, I even made duplicates of the tapes and left them with a friend because I was worried they might be picked up later on. So there were many different precautions I certainly took. I had a few unpleasant encounters with law enforcement authorities, but usually, you know, the simple ancient art of bribery worked in getting me out of those situations.
This has been a conversation with Parvez Sharma, director and co-producer of A Jihad for Love. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Personal Best, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. The first gay games took place in San Francisco in the summer of 1982. The sports competition focused not on winning, but on achieving one's personal best. It was originally billed as the Gay Olympics, but just days before it was scheduled to begin, the U.S. Olympic Committee filed an injunction that disallowed the word Olympics. Their homophobic act created chaos and near collapse, as event organizers scrambled to delete the word from posters, programs, t-shirts, and buttons. In the end, however, the controversy energized the athletes as well as the spectators. Addressing an enthusiastic crowd of 12,000 at the opening ceremonies, author Rita Mae Brown said, "We're here today not to celebrate homosexuality, but to celebrate and affirm individual freedom." The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
The 8th Quadrennial Gay Games will be held in July 2010 in Cologne, Germany. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Steve Levin, Mark Zecca, Rex Wachner with Bill Kelly, Dan Fritz, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Dustin Richardson, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Musically, you heard Nadia from the MySpace Gay Newer website, that's N-U-R, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is primarily supported by charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep us on the air. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of all our programs there. To receive our weekly email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KEUL Girdwood and Hope, Alaska, 2ECR Eden, New South Wales, WHUS Storrs, Connecticut, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.